overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
I love the stopping that the bell produces. This is Easter Sunday, and I'm so blessed with so many people I haven't seen in a long time are here. And this marks my 33rd anniversary in ministry. I started on Easter Sunday in 1989, and I'm still sitting here after 33 years. And I reflected on a statement of Muhammad Ali, who said, "If you get to 50 years of age and you're still the same that you were at 20, you've wasted 30 years of your life." And so, reflecting on 33 years, I recognize that I'm not the same young man. In fact, I'm entirely different, because I was provided the space of this container, of this sangha, to evolve. And the whole teaching of spirituality truly is about involution and evolution. We go within to discover that the very thing we're looking for, we're looking with. And so if we are looking for love, we learn to not look outside of ourselves for that love, even though it appears reflected in the multiplicity of the world. If you haven't found the love within yourself, very likely you won't find it in the world. And so after 33 years of ministry, I hear Emerson in my head, one of the ancestors, who says you can look the whole world over for happiness, but if you don't carry happiness within you, you're never going to find it. And so in our beautiful class that we're teaching last Wednesday, Thich Nhat Hanh talked about the pursuit of happiness as a divine destiny for all of us. But the paradox is, he says, the happiness is found in the suffering. And then he uses that beautiful metaphor that out of the mud, the lotus blossoms. And so we wouldn't have the lotus of happiness if we didn't first experience the mud of sadness and grief and loss and, in a strange sort of way, crucifixion, death, endings. And in order to have a resurrection, which is a state of emergence, of rebirth, it requires that we have a crucifixion, that we have a death. It may be the death to a dream that we identified with. And then we get to forgive the dream and forgive the dreamer, because we are all doing the very best we can where we start out in life. And if you've lived to be 73 years of age, as I have, you've had many dreams. And when the dream ends, there is a period of time where you feel lost and abandoned and confused, because I need another dream, until you don't need another dream. Until you surrender to the one who is the dreamer. I was reading Ernest Holmes yesterday, and he talked about inherent within creation is a divine urge to express itself. That this infinite divine love we'll call it the Father within, is what Jesus would call it, Abba, the beloved, must find an inlet and an outlet for its expression. He says the infinite needs the finite in order to be creative, in order to be revealed on earth as it is in heaven. And so the only way it can is through us, the creation. And so this Easter Sunday, I invite you to have your own resurrection, your own rebirth, your own death. And when you die well, you can be born well. Die daily to be born again in me, it says in the Bible. Die before you die, it says in the Quran. So what dies? Only that which is impermanent. The aberration, the belief. And then you smile to those seeming deaths because you know what's real never dies. And what's real at this stage of my ministry is love. Dr. Ernest Holmes said, let love lead the way and let the law make the way possible, spiritual law. And so what if we've had the old design for living was the reverse? We had the plan and then we were going to force that plan to happen no matter what until the plan didn't happen. And then we have to reacquaint ourselves with, well, who am I then? And what is important at this stage of my growth and unfoldment? And if you are blessed to have arrived at the question, well, then I hear the beautiful Talmud that says, why destroy a beautiful question with an answer? You live in the question. How then might I live in this exquisite dance of now, knowing that inevitably I will die? But for now, I am filled with the Holy Spirit, and all there is the Holy Spirit. And the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, if you want to use the Christian jargon, all exist simultaneously within all of us. Well, then we experience the Brahman, the one that knows no other. We experience the Atman, which is the soul, the oversoul, which inhabits all creation. And we experience the Holy Spirit, which is the energy of the divine, that one breath at a time reveals her mystery to the jubilant and beholden soul that awaits patiently at the core of all life. And so the invitation with the bell is to stop long enough to be here now, to be the awakened presence right now, and to touch this moment with kindness. It's the Dalai Lama, one of the most erudite Buddhist teachers in the world, who said, my religion is kindness. He didn't say it was Buddhism. He said it's kindness. And what I nurture and what I cultivate is the bodhicitta, which is the love that comes from the heart of the one. And there's only one here. So what if in this new design for living, we are cultivating a peace that passes all understanding amidst a war zone in this world? We are cultivating love where so much of what we see on the outside is war. And in doing so, we are the fashioning factor of this emerging consciousness, this resurrection of a whole new humanity, the Homo universalis, the universal human, where when we look through these eyes, we see the presence of the One everywhere revealing itself. And what has changed? Nothing other than our perception. And we hear Wayne Dyer say, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And so we're no longer looking at life as a problem to be fixed, but we're seeing it as truly a death and a rebirth. And we see it all around us in springtime. I have the consummate gardens, and every year I wonder what's going to resurrect from the soil, from the trees. And some don't make it, and others are resplendent. And the child of wonder in me stands in awe, stands in gratitude, knowing that it is the little things, that require our tenderness. And so this morning I arrived at the center with some little seedlings, and I put them in the containers outside and I watered them with love, knowing that that humble little seedling will ultimately put down roots, reach toward the light, will struggle with winds and storms and drought and this and that, but ultimately, with kindness, with mindfulness, it will flower and bear fruit. And could we be like the flower? Could we be like the bird who pauses on a while, for a while on boughs too slight and feels the bough give way beneath her, yet sings knowing she has wings? And so we look at nature now as an oracle, as a gospel, showing us how to be in this world, embracing our interconnectedness, not as separate beings, but as one life, God's life. And we are all that one life revealing itself in this holy instant of now. So this Easter Sunday, I invite you to have your own direct resurrection of the Christ presence that you are, of the Buddha consciousness that you are, of the divine love that you are. And you know, this love has no agenda. It doesn't say, I'm going to go to my enemy and change them. No, love doesn't do that. Love just shows up and reveals its mystery. It may come in the form of a little dog named Pepper. And she says, I'm a wild child, but I'm love incarnate. And then you realize that this love doesn't have an agenda. This love just shows up. And if we see it, it's because it's awakening within us. So I invite you now to open your eyes, if you are so courageous to do so. Enter into this space, into this sangha. You know, we're doing this lovely book of Thich Nhat Hanh's, The Art of Living. And how appropriate that he should be the inspiration for Easter Sunday. Because he made his transition on January 20th, and he said, I'm still here. He said, I didn't leave. He said, it's called the continuation. Spirit is still here. And some of us, like Susan and myself, experience him directly through his words on YouTube, through his writings here, and through his message within the heart. And being that it's Easter Sunday, I think of Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas, since he is the one that's celebrated all over the world today. And Jesus said, if you lift up the rock, lo, I am there. If you cleave to the branch, lo, I am there. In essence, he's saying what Thich Nhat Hanh is saying. I continue in all creation. I'm just not in this little Buddhist monk form anymore. I've liberated myself from this identity. So then you experience the ancestors. You know, the shamanic tradition talks about how the ancestors are here with us. Thich Nhat Hanh, that's one of his big phrases. And he said the expectations of the ancestors are within us. So what did Jesus, what did Thich Nhat Hanh, what did the ancestors, what were they trying to tell us? That we're here to, think about it, to love one another. Jesus' last message was just love one another as I've loved you. He said to not judge. If you judge, you're going to be judged. He said forgive 70 times 7 and until you don't need to forgive anymore. And you know, forgiveness, if you've lived as long as I have, it's all self-forgiveness because there's only one here. So could I forgive myself for shooting on myself all these years, and then find the freedom when I step out of that prison of my own self-righteous resentment, and I'm free to accept, to bear all things, endure all things. You know, freedom, forgiveness frees us. And then you go, wow, could I actually listen to what the master teacher was teaching that many years ago? Adam asked me to reflect on what I said last Sunday. It was my teacher, Kennedy Schultz, who said Jesus came 2,000 years ago to point the way, and for 2,000 years we've been worshiping his finger. And so many people are enamored of the man Jesus, but it was never about Jesus. It was about this message of love. It was that he talked about a God of love, not a God of wrath that judges you and your sins, but one that embraces everyone. I remember as a little kid growing up in the Lutheran church when they were stoning the harlot. Remember that lovely story? And you're 5 years old, and Jesus said, let him who is without sin cast the first stone. Well, the harlot and me smiled to that one. I'm only five, but I mean, he got it. You don't find some that are displeasing like this don't say gay kind of law on those poor trans children. I hope they have someone like Emily to hold them in their arms when they're confused and not say to them, you know, whatever people say to these little children who don't know who they are. So yeah, so we're called to touch the suffering. This is this whole class, you know, our beloved Terry Tudor, he had an accident with a saw, a table saw, and he's not here. I guess he's watching us on TV today. Now, you be careful out there, Terry. It just takes one moment of mindlessness, and you don't have to live the lesson when he says, touch your suffering with compassion. Poor Mary, she's getting a full lesson in that. And he says, all of life is suffering. So now, you know, get intimate with suffering. You're not going to know living until you know the suffering. So where do you suffer? And Thich Nhat Hanh says, let's start with your body. Maybe there's some arthritis. Beloved David was saying he's had some back issues and he had back surgery. So he says, could we touch the physical suffering with mindful awareness, with kindness? You know, I was a dancer for years, and being a dancer and a yoga teacher, I know what it's like to have a body that's free of pain. And yet when the pain comes, as it does through life, well, then could I smile to that pain? Could I touch it with compassion? So if my back is aching, could I open and sit up? Could I stretch my shoulders? I was looking at the garden yesterday because it's so beautiful, and knowing that I'm not separate from the garden. And there is a Japanese maple that my entryway, and I trained her. So she kind of goes like this, and she goes like this, and then you get to walk through her. So I was being the Japanese maple, and I was arching like she did, and I said, oh, that feels so good. So she was teaching me, if you just reach and arch, well, the pain goes away in your body. It's like coming home and finding the fruit on the table. And I thought, oh my God, you mean you're teaching me how to be free of a backache just by looking at the little tree and being teachable and being receptive? Well, then life is like a gospel. You go out in nature and it begins to show you. And you know that there was that wonderful song, she may be weary, women do get weary, wearing the same shabby dress, and when she's weary, try a little tenderness. She may be waiting, just anticipating, and you see it's all about relationship, but the bottom line of that kind of sad song was, when you try tenderness, it changes everything. When you approach something with kindness, things change. So could we start with ourself, with our physical body, and be gentle and kind when the pains arise? And then Thich Nhat Hanh says, then go to your emotional body. That's a little bit different, because those emotions kind of get buried and repressed. And we're so uncomfortable with grief and sadness. So it's much easier to get angry. We'll just get angry at that, you know, so-and-so that abandoned me, rather than feel the actual grief of loss. But when you, as Thich Nhat Hanh says, when you begin to touch the emotional body with compassion, then you create space for those feelings to arise. I'm not feeling safe now. Could I embrace that little one that doesn't feel safe? I'm feeling fearful now. Little fearful Freddy. Lee has a little fearful Freddy. Could he take little fearful Freddy in his arms? And you know, then you become an integrated being. You're not one of these kind of people that says, I've got a happy face, and then I've got this face that I don't show anybody in the world. Last Sunday, I talked about casting away all the masks that we wear, because the masks ultimately become a prison from which you hide, and you show the mask of the dutiful teacher, when in fact you might not feel like teaching that day, and to say, I'm out of here. I need to go and find a place to restore myself. Then there's a whole different way of approaching life. You're not operating from a programmed, this is what's expected of me and I should do this, but you're an authentic person who's listening to this inner guidance system and is choosing to set a next intention for the year by surrendering to something that wants to emerge rather than trying to program something from a dream that you know is your dream. And then you think, huh, I don't have to be trapped in that dream anymore. This month of March, we're exploring a new design for living. And I love it when you plant that seed. Could we embrace the new design, even though it means we have to let go of the old design? Some of us are so invested in that old design. You know, there's a beautiful line from, I think it's the 23rd Psalm, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of my stuff, don't build a condo there. And so sometimes when you evolve out of that pattern of creating suffering in your life, and suffering is a conscious thing when it becomes, oh my God, what's the one thing all of this has in common? Is me. Then you look to someone like Albert Einstein for your spirituality instead of the Gospel of Revelations. It was Einstein that said, the level of consciousness that's going to set you free is not the level of consciousness that held you bound. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. So if you want to be free, which is the whole idea of moksha, freedom, nirvana, the only way you can be free is to let go of that very thing that binds you, that contracts you, that holds you into some kind of idea of yourself and others in this narrow way of perceiving things. And then you get to say, could I live in the I don't know place, the uncertain place, and discover a new spirituality? Here it's Easter Sunday, it's 33rd anniversary. I'm talking about a new design for living. And I went to a Christian for inspiration. This is Matthew Fox. The elders I spoke about last week. To me, the elders are the ones who are what Jean Houston calls the evolutionary throw forwards. They're the ones that dare to speak truth to power, to the institutions, and the institutions don't like it. You know, Jesus was an evolutionary throw forward. Matthew Fox was a Catholic priest who spoke truth to the church. And he wrote this wonderful book called Original Blessing. And he says the problem with religion, the Christian religion, and he's speaking from wearing the robe of a priest, is that they predicate everything on the idea that we're born in sin. It's that Eve that led Adam astray, that gave him the apple, that was the beginning of sin, and we had to have Jesus die for his blood to be shed so we could be saved from our sinful, evil ways because we were born in sin. Not only your sin, but the sins of your ancestors. Anybody hear that besides me growing up? Holy cow, my dad was a mess. I was suffering as a kid. So here's what this priest says. Christians and others should not be afraid of the New Age movement or the New Thought movement. That's what we are. He said, newness is a divine attribute. He says, surely the human race is as adulterous toward inherited and familiar institutions. I can still see Jesus on the cross with the nails in his hands and patterns of living as it ever could be about new patterns. He says, the new can in fact prove to be quite old. Everything old is new again. If you go back to Plato and Plotinus, and you go back to some of the ancient sages, they were teaching oneness. They were teaching that we were born as an original blessing, not as an original sin. So he says, go back into your history and you'll realize it was just the institution that used this way of thinking to hold us in bondage to a belief system that doesn't fit anymore. If you're here, you're one of those. He says, for example, a new theology would be one of an original blessing. That you're born innocent and pure, you're not born in sin. An original blessing is in fact far more ancient than the familiar theology of original sin. So he says, awakening people to this new awareness is the baptismal experience of a rebirth. Or you could say a resurrection. So we get to lovingly hospice the old. You gotta die, honey. I remember when I was studying with Llewellyn, he says, do you trust me to kill you? Because really, what you have to die in order for this thing to awaken. So we're going to have a death of sorts. It is a metanoia. He said, metanoia is the Greek word for it's a waking up. And what is newest about these times is that there is a global demand on our consciousness right now. There is an imperative. If we don't awaken as a species, we may not be around. So what is the newest about our times is a global demand on consciousness right now. There is a global pain. There are global interconnections of both beauty and suffering. And the invitation is to create a global civilization of love, of justice, and of kindness. And an ecological harmony is the new invitation, an ecological harmony. I saw a little cricket in the bathtub yesterday morning. He had walked up from the basement through the pipes, and he was, you know, crickets are good luck in China. And Trey said, are you going to flush him down the toilet? And I said, no, I'm not going to flush that little cricket down. He's Jiminy, you know? And so I put the little cup, and Jiminy's bouncing up and down in the cup, and we went outside, and I said, you have a whole garden now in which to play. Now, it may sound small, but what if he who can see beauty, it was Meister Eckhart, he who can see beauty in the smallest of things is better than seeing an angel. Now, we all want these mystical experiences where Gabriel will come and speak to us, as it's reputed he came to Muhammad in the cave and he dictated the Quran. Here's a man who is illiterate, who gets dictation from an angel and writes a book called the Quran. If you've ever tried to read the Quran, you won't make any sense out of it. And yet, in the Quran, it says, Allah brings to Allah whom Allah will. So there's a little seed of truth. So what if this divine something came to you in February in your meditation to guide you, and you had the ability to listen to it and to say, I'm not going to cloud it over with the outline of my dream, because a lot of us listened to Wayne Dyer, and Wayne Dyer said, if you can conceive it, you can achieve it. So I grew up 33 years ago, and Judy Graff was there, in a New Thought teaching that says, when you do a spiritual mind treatment, get very clear what you want without outlining, and then you give this blueprint, this mental equivalent, to the universe, and then the universe will fill it. And a lot of people want that self-help, New Thought teaching. If you change your thinking, you can change your life. If you think positive thoughts, you'll have a positive experience. But you know, that's not a non-dual thing. That's saying, I want to be happy and I don't want to be sad. I've learned that all of it has to be included. And then you hear someone like a Rumi who says, this being human is like a guest house, and come knocking at the door of your consciousness are your fears and your judgments and your worry and your sadness. And Rumi says, invite them all in. They may be coming to clean out your house, your consciousness. And when you invite them in, well, then you hear Sad Sally, and Sad Sally just wants to grieve, and she wants to be held. You get creative Clarissa, who wants to create a whole new dream that we can dance around in. And then you've got practical Polly, who says, now, you've had so many dreams before. I like what Emily said. I've done the relationship again and again, and now I'm having a relationship with my life, with the love within me, with my body, with my emotions, with my mental capacities. And then there is the capacity, and it was the Buddha himself that says you don't learn from experience, because God knows we have a lot of experience in the room. The Buddha said you learn from your capacity to open to experience. So when life has an ending, well, then you can know endings and beginnings. The spiral dance goes on. And then when the endings happen, you realize what doesn't end. I gave Gigi a little book that Lisa Ferraro, my beloved, wrote. It's called Signs and Symbols from Our Ancestors. And she went around to people like Michael and said, Michael, talk to me about someone who's made their transition but who's still here with you. And so she gathered like 20 stories of different people who have personal stories of how spirit doesn't die, spirit's still there. And then her friend Natalia Zuckerman did art. One came through a feather, one came through a cardinal. And so you have this art and story meeting in the mystery of this life that was never born and never dies. I'll never forget the day Paul Fulford made his transition. He died on a Saturday, and we had church here on Sunday, and Serena came late. She's always late to church, if you notice. She has lateness in her consciousness. But she came in that Sunday, and she felt there was this pall of grief within the center. And she realized, oh my God, Paul Fulford has died. And so then Serena left the church, and feeling the grief in the center, and she was out in the parking lot, and she starts talking to Paul. Only Serena can do this. And Paul, she says, Paul, wherever you are, if you find that perfect man for me, please send him my way. And he said, Serena, go home. Go home. And I knew Paul was there in that holy instant, because only Paul would have said that to her. Now, what if we have the capacity to tap into the mystery of belonging to the universe in ways that we can't even imagine in this new design for living? Because Thich Nhat Hanh would say, you know, you're a spiritual being, you're having a human experience, but start connecting as a spirit, as an eternal life, you know, as the mystery of that which continues on. You've heard me share that story, and the universe will give us signs. That's why they call it signs and symbols from the ancestors. When baby Speck had died and we were grieved, I never saw Trey grieve so much because he put her down. They said she'll have 3 to 6 months to live. She had 3 days more. And he put her down because he couldn't bear to watch her suffer. And then he lived with that existential guilt. Did I do it too soon? Should I have waited and let her? And in that grief, and we were all, it was a very sudden ending because we hadn't anticipated, her beloved Bert all of a sudden one day started embodying her presence. She was ball obsessed. She wanted to chase the ball. She would throw the ball at you. She would push it with her nose. Bert never once in the 12 years we had him ever chase the ball until that one fateful day when we have it on film. He picked up the ball and threw it at Trey. And we looked at each other and said, "What's going on? Baby must be back here." And then Bert went and he pushed the ball with his nose. That was Baby's thing, right at Trey. And we looked at each other and we said, "Oh my God, he's possessed by her. How else could it possibly happen?" He picked up the ball, he threw it. She ran after it in his body. He came back, dropped it just like she did, pushed it again with the nose. And we said, "Okay, we needed proof. We have proof. Now she lives with Anastasia and she's chewing up a house, but she's still here. She continues on." And then you get to see things in a different way. This new design for living, you begin to open to this connection. I'm going to share with you a little Thich Nhat Hanh because he's so alive and well in me. And I love this book. I'm having a difficult time finding something to replace him because he's so relevant for me right now. He talks about the trees and how we're not separate from the trees. Nancy has a beautiful tree outside does she even know what kind of a tree it is? I didn't think so. I learned that I have to know every single plant. When I took horticulture, I memorized. I've got 5 million plants inside my head. And so now when I don't know it is, there's a thing called picture this. You can take a photograph of it and it'll tell you what rare, beautiful plant. Because they all have consciousness and they all. So he's going on about the tree, Thich Nhat Hanh. "You are just like a tree." And he says, "If you can generate and sustain an energy of calm, like the tree does, and embrace your own feelings of powerlessness, which the tree has, by following your breathing and relaxing your body, well then, in a strange sort of way, you're taking care of the energy of your own inner tree." Now, don't you like it? This is non-dual, Finn. He's saying we're all one. He says, "Offering a high quality of presence for someone who is suffering can already be supportive and healing for the other person." That's what you need to be doing with Ukraine. "Offering a high quality of presence for someone who is suffering can already be a very supportive and healing thing for the other person." So we get to take in a way the suffering of the planet. I know Joanna's feeling a lot of the pain, so am I, and put it in our heart and then surrender that to this divine love, to this grace that is abounding on the planet. He goes on to say, "We have to make peace and reduce the suffering within ourselves first, because we represent the world. It's never an outside job. It's always an inside job." And then he says, "Peace, compassion, and well-being begin with ourselves in the simplest act of kindness." Huh. Sometimes just touch your heart. You know, the Sufis say, put your head into your heart. So let your thoughts be loving thoughts, compassionate thoughts, tender thoughts, kind thoughts. Look at the kindness of just putting your arm around someone. So when we can reconcile with ourselves and embrace and transform our suffering, well, then we are also taking care of the world. Do I need to read that to you again, Adam? Because he's this compulsion to go over there and to Finland and to Poland and to work in here. "Don't think that you and the world are separate. You're not. Anything you do for yourself, you are also doing for the world." Anything you do for yourself, you're doing for the world. So there's a beautiful saying that says, be soulfully selfish. Every Sunday morning, when I was a student of truth, before I became the minister, I would work Saturday nights. I was in a French restaurant up late. Trey would want to lie in bed. I'm in my 20s, early 30s. And I said, no, I have to go to that center because every Sunday I was hearing a message that was changing my life. And I said, I have to make a commitment to that. It's to this inner something that Emily has found that is greater than any dream that I've had up until then. And it's not about changing Trey or changing the world. It's about having the courage to go through this transformation within myself. We're giving birth to this divine aspect of who we are. And you have to be so humble to say that. You know, that's why the Sufi path was really perfect for me when I allowed myself to evolve in these 33 years. When the student is ready, the teacher appears. And when I found Rumi, I mean, he would say, all swimming in the ocean of love ends in drowning. He would say, my life can be summed up by three words. I burned and I burned and I burned. And then he would say, love is a fire and I am wood. So he recognized that all there was left of me after all of that was ash. But what was all that was left of him was really this love that he evolved into. And then Jesus was in the same place. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. What is God? God is love. So Jesus, in a strange sort of way, had gone through Fana, the annihilation, and arrived at a place called Baka, which is abiding in the presence. Now that's what it's all about, is to go through your own via transformativa. That's what, what's his name? Matthew Fox talks about the via negativa. These are the paths to God. The via negativa is the path of negativity. It's not this, it's not that. So you go through denying everything and then you find out what it is. Then there's the via positiva, very religious science. Think happy thoughts. Be positive. Do positive affirmations. Serena's there. I am perfect, whole, and complete. Perfect health is the law of my life. Via positiva. You begin to build the consciousness of whatever it is that you want. But then he talks about the via creativa. And that would probably be my path. That's the path of creativity. I had my awakening on a dance floor when the choreographer said, all movement is discovered, it's not invented. And that took me into an exploration of the creative process. And the via creativa, he says, leads to the via transformativa, where then you go through the transformation. People don't want to go through a transformation. They like what they've created. They're comfortable in their dream. I've spent my whole life and I've retired and I've developed a persona, a mask that the world recognizes. I'm a somebody. Well, my beloved Marsha Cheesebro, somebody's got to go in order for nobody to emerge. And that was Ram Dass, you know, he said, when I was a kid, I went through somebody training and look at me, a Harvard professor, I did it all until I took my first LSD hit and I realized I'm here to become a nobody. And then he went to India, met his guru, and he says, you don't need the LSD to know that you're a nobody. And then when the nobody began to awaken, meaning that you're nobody separate, well, then he began to be an everybody. And that's when love awoke. And his last book was called Be Love Now, because he recognized that he'd evolved from being fully present to the experience of life, knowing that all we have is the moment, to this evolutionary place where he knew himself as soul, the continuation part, that would never die. And he said, and it's all about love. And what is one of the most gentle forms of love is just an act of kindness. So could we experience those little moments of kindness in our daily activity? One of my heroes is a man named Stanley Kunitz, and he lived to be a ripe old age. And he was a poet, and at the end of his life, he loved to garden. He would reflect on the stage before death and how he was having dreams and connections with those parts of himself that were eternal. And he would try to translate them to a young writer who came to do this like biography at the end of his life. And he said, I'm having experiences, Nancy would love this, of oneness, and yet I come back into this separate self, trying to reconcile this whole sort of thing. And this is one of his quotes. He said, it is out of the dailiness of the simple acts in life that one is driven into the deepest recesses of the self. It's the simple acts of tending your garden. And one of his poems was, he was walking through the garden and he saw the snakes wrapped around one another, hanging from a yew tree. And he put his hand up on the snakes and he felt the quiver of the snakes in his hand. And he said, this is our garden. It's not my garden. And in that holy, simple moment, he was having a connection with oneness. So that's the whole gift of oneness, the whole gift of kindness. And this, I'll close with this, and then we'll go into a meditation, Raoul. This is the inspiration for this series I'm doing, Things That Join the Sea and Sky. And it's Mark Nepo that talks about the necessity of kindness. My beloved Bill Savoy talked, it's all about kindness. So here's what Mark says about kindness. Kindness. He said, kindness is the antidote to everything. Kindness can accomplish much, Albert Schweitzer. As the sun makes the ice melt, kindness causes misunderstandings and mistrust and hostility to evaporate. So, under all the ways that we burn and hurt, there's this soft and lasting presence that we were born with, and it is simply waiting to blossom in the midst of whatever trouble you're having. Think of that. There's this gentle, simple kindness that gets to pick up Liam when he's having a tantrum. There's this simple kindness that goes to a little seedling that you planted in a pot that the chipmunks have thrown out of the pot, and you gently pick that seedling up and you put it back in the pot and you tell it it's going to be okay. My whole life is dealing with seedlings that get thrown out of pots by squirrels and birds. Simple acts of kindness. It is the kindness and the wisdom that we will encounter beyond our fears that brings us together and brings us alive. Just simple acts of kindness, random acts of kindness. He said, the first reward for this kindness is a thoroughness of being. It's all part of you. You know, anytime we do a kind thing, we're the one that reaps that act of kindness. That's the first reward. The next reward for being kind is a greater integrity in all our relationships. When I was a brand new minister 33 years ago, I would come home from church and Trey, we'd go for long walks with the dogs and he'd proceed to criticize me and say what I did wrong. And 33 years ago, I said, honey, I just need you to be kind. I need you to put your arm around me and be my support system because I have enough of those voices in my head that can be self-critical. So could we be kind and gentle with one another when we're going through those traumatic times? The next reward for kindness is a greater integrity in relationships. You'll tell someone that this is what I need. But the most enduring reward for kindness is our experience of oneness. For being kind renews our kinship with all things. Our kinship with all things, kinship with all life. Yep, that's the reward for oneness. So Raul, you want to ring the bell? For whom the bell tolls. The bell of mindfulness. And let's start with being kind to ourselves by just putting our hands on our body. And loving this container that we've been given, this physical form. When I studied with Louise Hay, we would do a chant, I love myself the way I am. There's nothing I need to change. I'll always be the perfect me. There's nothing to rearrange. I'm beautiful and capable of being the best me I can. And I love myself just the way I am. And having chanted that song again and again, and there's a lot of singing going on this Easter Sunday, we're doing a different kind of song. If we want to do Christ our Lord has risen today, well, let's do that, the Christ within has risen today in a field of awareness, the one life, the one love, awakening in time and space. And I love that self just the way I am. I don't need to change a thing in order for this love to reveal her mystery, her beauty, her tenderness, her kindness, her wisdom, her incredible imagination. And so then we begin to listen to that inner guidance system that I discovered on a dance floor when I was 25 years old, to discover that this presence didn't stop speaking 2,000 years ago, but it speaks a language of love. It speaks a language of silence. It speaks through the intuitive self, but we have to learn how to listen. And one of the greatest ways to do that is to be kind. The reach of kindness, the capacity to be kind. So this Sunday morning, let's make a commitment to be kind to our body. This body that serves us so, so well. And oftentimes we get on autopilot and we don't realize that we haven't been kind to our body. And so just through a simple act of sitting up straight, aligning our spine, the spine rejoices. My mother used to say, stand up straight, you're slouching. And now I find myself hearing her loving voice saying she wasn't speaking like a correctional person. She was saying how much better you feel when you align in your spine. And so I smile then as my body smiles back at me. I invite you to touch your emotional body now with compassion and kindness. To be kind to those little parts of you that might be afraid or concerned or that are feeling the grief on the planet. You know, if we're feeling grief, and I'm sure many of us are because we see this played out on TV, what's going on in Ukraine and throughout the world, we don't take the storm on the outside and put it on the inside, but rather we open our heart to embrace the suffering, the collective suffering. And then in that opening to embrace that collective suffering, we also open for the grace of the breath, the grace of divine love. And we feel it in our own personal life, and we can know that there's only one life here. And so we begin to become a fashioning factor for peace, acceptance, love, and that transformativa consciousness that needs to happen on planet Earth Someone asked, why aren't we a bigger movement? And I said, because it's quality over quantity. You know, we have chosen to be that new emerging consciousness, stepping out of institutionalized religions where they would have a physical resurrection. That Meister Eckhart said, if Jesus physically resurrected, he'd be somewhere around Pluto by now, even though Pluto doesn't exist as a star in the galaxies. And then you can smile to that infantile idea and then realize that the resurrection is a spiritual one, just like we're feeling the presence of Thich Nhat Hanh, who said, if you don't see me in the cloud, you'll see me in the rain. Huh? Or if you look at the paper in the book, you don't see the paper, you see the sun and you see the rain and you see the earth, and we all inter are. And so we are evolving into a place of non-dual thinking. That means there aren't two, there's only one here. And that we all inter are, as Thich Nhat Hanh would say. We are all each other. And if you've seen me, he'd say, you've seen the ancestors, so the ancestors live in us. So we invite the ancestor of Jesus, Yahshua ben Joseph, the awakened Jew, who was on fire with love, who was a Sufi through and through. The Sufis were the lovers of God. And so when we let go of the form of the man, Yeshua ben Joseph, son of Joseph, we recognize that the Christ endures. And we smile to that Christ energy on Easter Sunday. Huh? And we smile to our own resurrection, this rebirth of a new sense of self with every day that we are born, with every day that we are alive. We waken to that morning and say it's a new day to experience the mystery of belonging. And we invite this divine presence to assist us in assuming the consciousness that's required to take the next step. And we open to this vast interconnectedness where we are teachable. We cultivate the beginner's mind. We hear Jesus say, be like a child if you would enter the kingdom. He would say, you can have this inner kingdom of awareness when you become innocent and curious and playful. And so we begin to resurrect that eternal self that sees things in a different way. And we smile. We smile to this new design for living. Whose design is it? Is it your design? Or is it perhaps a design that is so much greater than yours? Could we smile to that, even though we're not certain what it will look like? Huh. I had a little parakeet named Lucretia. She was blue, and she would sit in her cage and squawk and squawk. And when Trey and I bought our first house, we had a solarium with trees and plants. And I opened the doorway to Lucretia's cage, and I said, here, set yourself free, my beloved. And she would never leave her cage. She'd sit on the doorway. She'd crawl around the cage. But she was bound by the very thing that she was complaining about. So this Sunday, I invite your inner Lucretia to step out of the cage of familiarity, the cage that she would somehow have identified as your security blanket, and to notice what it's like to be free. Huh? How there's safety and freedom. Yes, there's uncertainty, but uncertainty is a beautiful place to hang out in. I don't know, but I know that there's something that does know. So could I open to that something? Remember Einstein, the level of consciousness that has created this quagmire that you're in is not the level of consciousness that's required to set you free. So I am willing to be resurrected into a whole new way of seeing life. Not as a victim of my cage, but as a bird who can fly freely to the next inevitable moment where I will find the grace of God is sufficient and life provides the connection that is required in order to take the next step. Take a deep integrating breath as you align yourself to this presence within you and all around you. Feel intimate with that presence. It's what you are. It longs to express through you as you. And when you find it within yourself, guess what? You see it everywhere, because it's all the one self, the one life. Hear, O Israel, the Lord God is one. And then everything old becomes new. You begin to see things with different eyes. In the beginning, darkness was on the face of the earth, and God said, let there be light. That was the light from within, the Shekinah. And so darkness then becomes the face of God. And within the darkness, the light begins to emerge. And everything then is new. Everything is revealed in a different way. The virgin birth takes place within that pure part of us where the Christ awakens. It's not something that happened on December 25th, but is an intimate experience that's always happening. And we smile because we have stepped into this new order of being that requires us on the planet at this time to unite as one life, God's life. And to that, let's join in the heart salutation by saying to this emerging presence, I honor you. I respect you. I love you. I love saying that last one. Let's do it again. I love you. Know that you're saying I love you to the deepest part of the self within the self. And when you go take one step toward this divine love, it comes running toward you. Are you ready to experience the vastness of that love? Say yes. Yes. 1,000 times yes. Bring it on. Bring it on. I am ready. This life belongs to you. I'm the only one that says that. This life belongs to you. Do with it as you will. I stand in awe. All is well, and so it is. Thank you, my loves. Thanks for sending in your tithes. Thanks for your beautiful smiles. Happy Easter, everybody. And enjoy. In your Easter bonnet, with all the frills upon it.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. To create a brand new world.